Hey, it's Bob Stauffer. I just wanted to let you know that you can listen to Oilers Now ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
All right, we have Craig McTavish, MACT on Mondays. It is brought to you by Contract Equipment Limited, Canada's premium heavy equipment dealer with rental and sales. We will tell you that guests and Oilers Now receive gift certificates to Roost Chris Steakhouse, whether you're celebrating a special moment or simply savoring a night in the town. Every meal is an occasion at Roost Chris Steakhouse. Tell Chris and Chef Al Taff and Brendan that Oilers Now sent you. We can't even discuss on air. Well, we can talk a little bit about it. We'll get back to the Oilers in a second, Craig. But you were just talking about guys of your vintage that swung and hit real hard. And I know that, I think it was a preseason game, Wendell Clark got the jump on you one
time.
Do
we have to talk about that again?
This is
the third week we've talked about this. Okay, I got beat up, Bob. I get it.
You know? No, but I remember you worked over Hartsburg the one time. Well, but you said there's a couple other guys back then that you had to be, and you said Kurt Fraser was another guy.
Kurt Fraser had a hand, massive hand.
Yeah.
And he used to fight Jeff Bookaboom a lot. And he always had a borderline sucker punch, or he got that punch off quickly.
Yeah.
And he hit Book a few times, which contributed to Jeff's concussion problems down the road. He struggled at the end of his career with concussion problems, but that he was super strong. Joey Kosher was coincidentally Wendell Clark's cousin,
right?
And he had all kinds of problems with his hands. His hands were all, because he hit so hard,
right?
And messed up his hands. But I mean, Tony Twist was another guy that
Hamburger Helper helped him out.
super lethal if he hit you.
Proby, you guys had a lot of respect for Proby because he was a pretty good player too, and he didn't really go around picking on the mid-sized guys.
He was honest. Honest, you know. Everybody had a lot of respect for Bob, and Bob wasn't. I mean, a lot of times back in those days, you're tough guys out of necessity because, how dangerous it was to be a tough guy, were juicing up. And I never got the sense that Bob was into that because of the build that he had.
Right.
I mean, he had a long, lanky build, much like Dave Brown, who was
a cold-blooded assassin.
Yeah, as scary as any man alive if you made him mad. Or threatened his livelihood. But, luckily and thankfully, most of the tough guys I've always played with are the kindest, gentlest. They've got the longest fuse away from the rink.
You, in infamous moment in the 91 playoffs, the meeting of the last two Canadian, at that time, the Flames had won in 89. You guys had won in 1990. Of course, you'd won in 87 and 88. You guys played in the 91 playoffs, and you're in game three at Edmonton, and it gets to be a bit of a runaway. And there's Dave Brown's, Darren Titian's infamous lines starting. I worked with Dutchie over on Sportsnet at ITV back then, starting the lawnmower on Jim Kite, and Stefan Matteau went in there. But you were a little concerned for Jim Kite, too. Like, just get out of there. Get this over with.
Yeah. Brownie was going to kill him.
Yeah.
And he had him down, and Brownie gave him a shot, and then he started really pile driving him, and I thought Dave Brown was going to kill him, so I jumped in and grabbed Dave, and years later, a couple years later, Jim Kite was trying to get me, and so I'm. I saved your life. Like, you're trying to fight me now? And, I wasn't in that weight category. He was going to have to go through a bunch of stick to get to me.
Absolutely. The great equalizer.
But, I was horrified with the lack of respect he had for a guy that literally
saved
his life. But I asked Dave Brown after the game, I said, Brownie, I had to. I thought you were going to kill him. And he said, well, I did let up. And then he reached up from being down on his back and punched me in the face, and then that's when I was going to go to town on him.
Yeah, absolutely. But, and there was a degree of physicality. You coached some underdog Oilers teams in 01 and 03 against Dallas in the pre-lockout world. We're going to be at an event with Cal Nichols Saturday night, the Toast of the Town. I know you and me are both looking forward to that.
Yeah.
You guys were taking a pocket knife into the gunfight, proverbially, in terms of the salary caps of the two teams at that time. kind of changed a bit by 06, didn't it, though? Everybody's kind of on a little bit more level. Even though Detroit had lots of experience, the fact is everybody was, you know, Dallas had gone from $80 million to $40 million to get cap compliant, and the Oilers were up to $40 million. Kind of changed things a bit, didn't it?
Well, that allowed the Oilers and Kevin to add guys like Pronger and Pekka and Rowley ultimately. I mean, we were the only one of the one or two teams that was capable of taking one of the or two of the salaries where the other teams had to dump.
Right.
And as they're dumping, we're getting, you know, a Norris Trophy caliber player
right.
in Pronger and Selke caliber player in Pekka. So it was a competitive advantage for us because our payroll would allow us to absorb. And, you know, Cal was ready to take on the money. And you're right. I'm looking forward to attending that dinner and a tribute to a real gentleman in Cal Nichols.
Who is part of the reason, you know, and ultimately, you know, the Edmonton Investors Group sold the team to Daryl Cates. Daryl pushed for the building to get done. We're sitting in that building as we speak. And we got lucky because we get to watch two of the world's best players on a nightly basis. I mean, and we've got real good support players around it, but it's I'm sure it's not lost on you. Twice in a lifetime for me as an Edmonton kid growing up, first watching Wayne and Mark, you know, and now we get to watch, you know, Connor and Leon.
I just love the facility here.
Yeah.
And, you know, Daryl doesn't get enough credit for the design of the building, and he's a super bright guy in terms of designing houses and buildings and super detailed guy. And I mean, I still believe that Montreal is my favorite place to watch a hockey game, but this is second now.
Yeah.
And it's just electric in here, playoff time. I love the configuration of the building. It's there's a ton of energy, passionate fans. And you're right, we're here watching two iconic players play every night. And I mean, that were, in my mind, the most exciting team. We might not be the best team. The playoffs will determine that.
Yep.
But we're the most exciting team to watch day in and day out because of the things that you see out here that you don't see as much of in other buildings. I mean, notwithstanding the McKinnons of the world and the Kucherovs of the world and the Austin Matthews of the world and McCars and Hughes, I mean, those guys are all worth the price of admission. Even Patrick Kane, I mean, he's slowing down a little bit, but he's still great to watch. But really, we have to enjoy what we have here in Edmonton.
All right, so the Canucks went 4-0 against Edmonton this year. The first game of the year, they won 8-1 in Vancouver. They came back here, and the Oilers outshot the Canucks 41-16 and lost 4-3 in that game. And then in a game in which Edmonton had outshot Vancouver 19-2 at one point in the first period, the Oilers lost 6-2 in Vancouver. And that turned out to be the third last game that Jay Woodcroft coached. The Oilers lose the other night. They didn't have Connor. It was a close game. You've already said you thought if the Oilers had Connor, maybe they'd win the game. Should the Oilers be concerned about the Vancouver Canucks at all?
Well, I'll just say this. The Edmonton Oilers had never won a game in the Boston Garden. Back in 1988. I mean, they'd never won a game in the Boston Garden, and we played them in 1988 and 1990 and never lost a game.
Right.
So, I mean, notwithstanding Vancouver, and I'm not...
they've had a real good year. Rick Tocchet's a good coach.
Yeah. I'm not underestimating them. They're a really good team, but I'd take our guys, if in a four-game series with Connor healthy.
I remember, Craig, in 88, the scuttlebutt, and maybe because it's more regional. Like, I think Vancouver has, in many ways, like, the Battle of Alberta was back up 2 years ago in the playoffs, and then Connor and Leon wrecked the Calgary Flames. You know, Kachuk wanted out of there. Goodrow didn't want to re-sign. Fortunately, they got Uyghur. Otherwise, they would have been destroyed in the trade for Kachuk. They signed Kadri, but since then they've lost. They traded Hanifin and
Tanev.
And they're probably going to trade
Lindholm.
Like, they're not even the same organization. So the Canucks are the rival, and I think back to Calgary to '88. I think back to the 1988 playoffs, and Calgary had beaten you guys all season that year, and they finished ahead of you marginally in the regular season. And this is when you still had Wayne Gretzky on the team. But I remember a lot of the media pundits out there, Craig, they had, oh, Calgary's going to, it's their time, they're better than Edmonton. Didn't exactly come to fruition that year in the playoffs in 80. You guys,
I don't recall them winning a game, but
they did win a game in the 80s.
I remember Bill Petty, the great golf pro from the Edmonton Golf and Country Club, was at the game in Calgary when Gretz scored that goal shorthanded over Mike Vernon's shoulder, and Bill said, "Take the ice out, boys, we're not coming back." And we didn't.
Yeah.
We got him in games 3 and 4 back here in Edmonton.
Do you remember when Marty got Mike Bullard?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Left in a stretcher. I thought that was all, like, theatrical.
Yeah.
And
he speared him where the sun didn't shine. Like, yeah. You got to be able to take that. Got to be able to skate through it, right?
Yeah. I guess Marty had a lot more power than it looked then. But, yeah, that he got taken out in the stretcher.
But I just remember, like, 88, like, it was all the Flames. And to me, it reminds me a bit of this year with Vancouver. Like, you know, Calgary had lost in 87. They lost to Winnipeg in the playoffs. And then you guys pounded Winnipeg in 87 in round two. Well, this time in 88, it was all Calgary's ready to dismantle and dethrone the Oilers as the power in the division, and despite the division, you guys routed them in 4 straight. So it's pretty. And I guess
yeah, I wouldn't draw too many.
That's only 35 years, Craig. Come on.
Yeah. too many conclusions from losing 4 games this year and playing them in the playoffs.
You wouldn't worry about that, eh?
No, I wouldn't. No.
There you go. That's Craig McTavish, Bob Stauffer with you in Oilers Now. It's 5:17 in Edmonton. Mac T, I'm going to ask you this. You got 3 games left in the regular season. Realistically, Vancouver's probably going to pick up a point one of those 3 games to get top spot in the division. How would you handle the likes of McDavid and Drysdale? Do you play them all 3 games with a back-to-back?
No. No. I wouldn't. I don't think it's... I'd be surprised. Connor plays tonight. Does he play again in Arizona? Certainly doesn't play in Colorado.
Okay.
I would really think that they would not play Connor in Colorado and risk any type of injury whatsoever. Why would you?
You know who I wouldn't play in Colorado? I wouldn't play Ekholm in Colorado.
Yeah.
Because obviously he got ran and it was a big hit.
Sure.
It was a clean hit. Clean hit. But why even put himself in that position? You know what I mean? Like, just he can go play. They're going to have.
You're right. He should not play Ekholm in that situation, in my opinion.
It's too valuable.
Yeah. Get ready, gear up, give them a little break. It's a long season. These guys have played a lot of minutes. Ekholm plays warrior minutes out there, as does Connor, as does Leon. I'd give them the game off for sure, and might give them the last 2 off.
Craig, you had some tough times as the GM of the Edmonton Oilers. As somebody that bleeds the colors, and you do bleed the colors. When we come back, we're going to discuss how brutal this has been for San Jose, because the numbers are ugly with a capital U. I mean, it is.
Yeah.
19 wins, minus 139 goal differential. That is nasty. Craig McTavish, Mac T on Mondays when we return on Oilers Now. All right, welcome back, everybody. As promised, we've got Craig McTavish, Mac T on Mondays, brought to you by our friends at Contract Equipment Limited. And in the 8 years that Craig coached the team, the Oilers, out of 82 games, won 39, 38, 36, 36, 41. The year you went to the Stanley Cup Final, 32, 41, missed the playoffs. Difference of 7 points in the 2 years, the 07-08 year to the 05-06 year, because of loser points. And then your last season was 08-09. You won 38 games. So you never really had a terrible team in any of those years. You had an injury-plagued year in 06-07. 32 wins. That was the only year you didn't get at least a 35 to 38 wins. The 2 years you were GM, Craig, 29 and 24 wins. 24, that was a tough year, 14-15. But not 19 wins.
Well, I could tell you it felt like it. No, I used to, back I mean, it was horrifying, really. But watching,
well, can you imagine what it'd be like to be with a team that's got 19 wins and a minus 139 goal differential?
You watch the game, and, I mean, we don't touch the puck, you know, rarely. And to get outshot by 18 shots in a period or a couple periods, I mean, we just really didn't have anything. And it's...
Well, you at least had Hall and Nugent Hopkins.
It's humiliating.
Okay. Especially for a guy like you that had been there, you know, and been, by your own admission, a good support player on a great team. That's what you were. But the drop-off was substantive. What do you think it's like for Mike Gura in San Jose? 19 wins, minus 139 goal differential, and he's traded arguably his two best players over the last calendar year. Defenseman Erik Karlsson, he's retaining for four more years after this year. Forward Tomas Hertl, he's retaining for six more years after this year, and he ends up getting a number one as part of those deals.
Well, it's a tough, going to be a tough go for Mike, and you know, that's where ownership comes into. You've got to have close communication with ownership so you're on the same page in terms of what the objectives are, and how long is the rebuild? What's the expectation on the rebuild? I'm not sure I really get the strategy of trading all your tradable players for future assets. I mean, I would think that you would need to keep some players for competitiveness, but, I mean, obviously they can go out and get into the free agent market and try and augment their lineup, but it's a long time. It takes a long time to rebuild.
They only won 22 games last year.
Yeah.
And now 19 this year. They got two games left.
Anaheim, similar. I mean, all your tradable players.
Well, Pat Verbeek has the worst record of any GM in the league since he took over, and what was the first thing he did is he traded Hampus Lindholm. This is an organization that didn't protect Shea Theodore. At one time, and they traded Lindholm and Manson in the same stretch run down the stretch of that year. Like, Dallas Eakins didn't have a chance with that team. Their team was full of number six and number seven defense, and the team we're watching tonight with San Jose, it's the same thing. They don't have a legitimate top four defenseman on their team.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's tough, but Mike is a very competent, capable guy, and he's a patient guy. We had him for quite a few years here. Unbelievable teammate, great Oiler, part of maybe the best checking line that I have ever had as a coach with Ethan Morrow and Todd Marchant and Mike Greer on the right side. I mean, those guys were, talk about pressure. All over oppositions, I mean, he was a great player for us.
You're invited to join Dennis and Jason in New West Travel on an Avalon River cruise next March. I won't be going because I plan on doing Oilers games next March. You can explore Southeast Asia as you discover Vietnam, Cambodia, Thailand. A 19-day tour includes a 7-night river cruise with gourmet meals, fine wines, and daily tours. You'll be immersed in cultures and ancient traditions as you sightsee and spend time in the most fascinating places along the mighty Mekong River. Book by May 31st. You can save up to $1,300 per person. For full details, contact New West Travel. To Oilers game day trivia, Craig knows the answer, so he cannot answer this one. Pro-Am Sports is your fan cave specialist. I know you've done signings at Pro-Am Sports with Jack Cookson. All correct answers this month are entered to win an autographed Stuart Skinner jersey from Pro-Am Sports. Visit them online or in Edmonton on St. Albert Trail. Here it is. Which former Calgary Dinos head coach was the first head coach of the San Jose Sharks? He actually played for Claire Drake at the University of Alberta. 780-496-0063. Which former...
Unbelievable person, too.
A unique guy. Different, a little bit different
person. Fantastic person.
You can text us on... What did he used to say? What was he...
I could hear him on the bench when I was playing against San Jose. He'd be, pressure, Pressure.
Name the former Calgary Dinos head coach, the first head coach in San Jose Sharks history that used to say pressure. There you go. Back to you. Thanks for coming by. You're on the panel tonight. Hopefully you can make up for the other stiff that's on with you tonight. We shouldn't talk
about it. It's a tall task, but I'm up for it.
There we go. Kratz, Craig McTavish, he'll rejoin us Monday of next week, where we'll either be discussing what happened in Game 1 or whether we'll be getting ready for Game 1 of the Stanley Cup Final. Off to a global news weather traffic update. Text us the correct trivia answer, 780-496-0063. Frank Saravalli when we return.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.